there's a reason why the people are people pleasers. So growing up with the physical abuse I endured, I would people please because I was stuck thinking that if I didn't, I'm going to die and I'm in danger. So sometimes it's not only the love, it could be the security and the safety. And for me, I was stuck with those two, thinking, oh my gosh. And your heart starts beating super fast. And sometimes your breathing starts going a little bit more shallow. And there's nothing there, but it's all because of the word no that elicits that same response that happened to you way back when you were a little kid. Then you decide to people please to avoid the tolerance of that distress.
Welcome to the Rising Beyond podcast, where you can find hope and healing after a toxic or abusive relationship. I'm Sybil Cummin, a licensed professional counselor specializing in working with victims and survivors of domestic violence and narcissistic abuse, including the youngest witnesses. Over the past decade, I have been honored to witness victims move to survivors and then to thriving in their lives. If you feel alone in your healing process, are dealing with the onslaught of post-separation abuse, or just needing some validation that you are not crazy, you are in the right place. How often are you kicking yourself because you said yes to something when you don't have the time or didn't really want to do it? Or maybe you backed down and agreed to one of your ex's requests because you just wanted to avoid the conflict. People pleasing is a skill that once kept you safe, but it's not something you want to continue forever. Welcome to the Rising Beyond podcast. I'm Sybil Cummin, the creator of the Rising Beyond podcast and the Rising Beyond community. And I am so excited to share my conversation with Anita Sandoval with you all today on how to stop the people-pleasing and become empowered. So Anita is a licensed professional counselor, supervisor, and EMDR certified clinician with over 14 years of experience. She has authored the book called Broken Chains based on her experience, and she hosts a podcast called the Empowering Women in Conversation podcast. Her path to becoming a licensed professional clinician is deeply rooted in her story of transformation. As a third-generation survivor of abuse and neglect, she knows firsthand the challenges and the pain that these cycles can perpetuate. However, she had really strong determination to break the cycle and become a woman empowered, and she is here to share her growth and help you in your growth. I am so excited for this conversation. Let's welcome Anita to the show. Anita, thank you so much for being with us on the Rising Beyond podcast today.
Thank you for having me here. I'm so excited to share and collaborate and talk about mental health for your community.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really helpful because in our conversations before, you really, first of all, understand this from your own experiences, yes. But then you really understand this as well from that mental health background because you are a trained mental health provider as well. And so many of my audience really resonate with the people-pleasing and fawning aspect of their healing process. So I think this is going to be such a great conversation.
Love it. Yes, definitely. People-pleasing, fawning, and for me, I remember being introduced to that subject as Stockholm Syndrome, thinking, what's happening? And patients would tell me, parents would tell me when their children would have a relationship with the predator, but how could they do this? Because look at them. Look, they seem in love. And I have to tell them before it was even known it was people-pleasing or fawning, well, just because they show that behavior doesn't mean it. They do not like them, but they do not like what they do.
Yeah.
So there's a separation between who they are and what they do within the behavior and the person that they are. And realizing here in the Rio Grande Valley, I knew it was a subject that was novice at best here. And I just wanted to advocate for it, which is what I believe in here. And I'm so excited to share that and express any opinions, any theories, any subjects for that matter to help with your patients and your community as well.
Yeah. And something you just said, and I really want to grab because my audience knows that I have some ADHD and I will go off in random tangents. So I wanted to talk about it right now because you said it, but that idea of their behaviors are different from who they are. I think that is really important to touch on. So maybe we will touch on a little bit more as we go, but I think that's so helpful to look at.
Definitely. And a lot of people assume that people learn only through vision, but what we do know is because I focus on neurobiology, the study of the mind and the body, and we have information processing, the input through our five senses. The mind speaks one language, but the body speaks the five senses, which is touch, taste, sight, sound, smell. So when people say, do as I say and not what I do, it doesn't work that way. For the most part, we process information through sensory, which is of doing, of touching, of tasting. Vision is just one aspect. So they hear something, they smell something, they physically are doing something within that environment that is toxic, unhealthy, people-pleasing. Then they are inputting that information that it's okay because the body does not know good, bad, right, wrong. It just knows what it's comfortable as of a habit, a tolerant habit per se.
Yeah. Yeah. So, because I think that will come up as we have this conversation, can you share a little bit about your experience and how you are where you are today doing the work that you are doing today?
Well, my story starts here in the Rio Grande Valley about 150 years ago. It used to be Mexico, then we became the U.S. So there was a lot of displacement within families. My grandmother and my mother would talk to me about how there was a lot of racism. They couldn't speak Spanish. They would get hit. They would be called beaners. So then they had families in Mexico being displaced, now being here in the U.S., having to know new traditions, new customs. All of that displaced tribal families. So I come from a third generation of abuse and neglect. My grandmother, from the least, I mean, that I know, there could be more generations. I don't know. My mother and then me. And I realized this is a cycle of abuse and neglect. My mother's addiction was men because she was not given the love and attention that she so needed, neither my grandmother. And it just perpetuated that need for love because as Maslow's hierarchy of needs, love and belonging, it is not a want. It is a need innate in our body to thrive. And so because they weren't giving that, they tried to get what they wanted through people pleasing. If I give them this, they will give me that. And when you have little ones, well, what can they give you aside from responsibilities and obligations that they don't know themselves? So then when I was growing up, I was raised with that neglect. And then, of course, the abusers of my mom, because she had three girls. So we were perfect. There was insecurity within my mom. There was low finance because she was a widow. My father had died from a drunk driver back then, and he got away. Why? Because back then, if you were not Mexican and you were white, it was okay. And so my mother was distraught. No money, no education. She wasn't able to graduate because she was bullied. And that's what I was left with as a mother to take care of. So I had constant bullying growing up because I was unkept, no hygiene. My mother was just so depressed, stuck in her room crying, and just really wasn't all there. Emotionally, physically, she was there, but her dissociation was just not there. And therefore, growing up in junior high, growing up in high school, there was constant bullying. I dropped out at 15 years old, ended up leaving with my first husband, who was 7 years older. And he, of course, said, oh, I'll take care of you. And well, coming from a broken home where there was no love and attention, the mind is seeking for anything. So here I'm thinking, oh my gosh, he's giving me this attention, thinking that was okay. Oh, well, he lives in a home with food, because at times we didn't have food or water, not even toilet paper for that matter. So here I'm thinking, wow, I'm going to be living in this place where there's toilet paper, there's food, there's water. I'm going to go. And so I ran away, moved in. And then, of course, there's the honeymoon stage. And there's only so much a person who is also unhealthy and toxic can prolong healthy behaviors. And I started realizing early on within the marriage that it was not so. So going back to the high school, and this is something that happens when it comes to abuse, especially sexual abuse. I started developing in high school. The girls, instead of being supportive and understanding, were being mean girls, bullying, because I had developed. The men were now paying attention to me. It was bad enough that my mom's boyfriends were paying attention to me and me trying to just shove them off, and these men being older than me. But then now we have the generation where they're my age and I didn't know what to do because I was so used to like, no, get away. That sexual objectification growing up in the household was something I had to grow up with and manage within therapy as well, because I had to discern, do they love me for me or do they love me for my body? So that was something, within itself that I had to manage that I did not know of growing up. So that's something I had to grow, learn, and change with my process of healing. And now when I was with my husband, well, ex-husband, excuse me, I guess I want to say, because he began having an affair and he blamed me. He said, well, you don't cook, you don't clean, you don't do your duties as a woman should. And so, of course, I'm going to leave you for another woman. You have to do your due diligence and you have to please me or else I'm going to leave. And I digress, but present day, I was my daughter, who is 14 years old, was getting her nails done. And the manicurist, he's not even from this culture, Mexican American. So I just want to share, it doesn't matter what culture it is. He is of another, he's Korean, and he says, oh, you need to make sure you take care of yourself. You're so beautiful and you're so thin. You need to make sure you don't gain any weight, because then they will leave you. The men will leave you. So if you learn one thing when you get older, make sure you stay thin, because then they will leave you for another woman. And you don't want that now, do you?
I was oh my just gosh. Like,
yeah.
I would be like, Mama Bear, like, up in arms.
Right? I know. And so I have to sidestep and be like, hey, what do I do? Because she's 14. And I want her to also know what type of people we have out there in the world. Because we're going to have all types of people. And it's up to us to learn, grow, and change and discern healthy, unhealthy, what goes within us. And she looks at me and she opens her eyes like, and I look at her and I'm like, and that's all it took. That's all it took. It's like, you go do the nails. He's been doing it for 16 years. And then once we get out, we discussed and we had a debrief. What are your values? What do you believe in? And do you think that a man should love you for your body? And she's like, oh, no, mom, he was crazy. He does good nails, but there's no way that I'm going to want a partner who's going to want to just want me if I'm thin or fat or this or that. Me doesn't define me of what I look. And I'm like, you go, girl. Okay. You know?
Yeah.
And this is future me, guys. Okay. So I was 15 when I was married. She's 14 now.
Yes.
I want to share that. I could not discern that.
I was thinking that like, that's something that we talk about a lot, is giving our children that gift of perspective and that gift of discernment. And I was thinking too that you probably having to really formulate or reformulate what you valued as you were growing up and as you were going through an abusive relationship, like what were your values and how, because my guess is they are very different than what you learned.
Oh, yes. Let me tell you, and this is something I reflect. So if there's any one thing you guys want to learn out there, it's this. The journey, there's no destination, guys. You're always learning, growing, and changing. And I'm literally, I want to say yesterday or the day before, I was thinking to myself and reflecting, because I do this every day because I love myself now and I want to keep loving myself. And I say, in order for me to move forward, I really have to put and grieve and have that person that was me before die. Because in order to be reborn like the phoenix, and that's a symbol that I associate with, to be brought up within the ashes and rise even better than before, we have to learn how to grieve and mourn, going through the seven stages of who we were, have compassion and understanding of that part of me, but know that that part of me doesn't exist anymore as long as I maintain the values, behavioral intentions that I am now.
Yeah. And giving that, 15-year-old you, or even the younger you, that love, grace, give that little girl a hug and grieve what she went through, who she had to be.
Yes.
In order to stay safe.
Yes.
And now yes. You don't have to be that.
Oh, yes. And that's the one thing I have to continuously learn. I'm not in survivor mode anymore. I am just me being in a mode of loving myself and being there for myself first before others. And one of the things that came up this morning to me, I think my husband, my now amazing husband, and we've been married for 15 years, he said something, I don't know what he had said. And I was just like, oh no, I'm doing me right now. So the help meeting other people's needs right now is offline, and meeting my own needs right now is online. Once I've met my needs, then I can go meet your needs, and that'll be online right now. But that's offline right now, and that's okay.
Yeah. And I'm guessing that so many of my listeners right now are like, but how did she do that? But how did she do that? Because they are, maybe they're not 15. Most likely they're not 15. But they are in all the different stages of the healing process. So what were some of those things that led you to move from probably that self-doubt, that self-loathing, and kind of helped your nervous system trust that you didn't need to be in survival mode all the time?
Okay, so great question. The process, it was slow and steady. One of my favorite stories by Aesop's Fable is the tortoise and the hare. Slow and steady wins the race. You may not see what's out there, but you need to have that faith. So spirituality, for sure, have faith in something. And growing up, my father had passed away day before my second birthday. Let me think. I was two going on three the day before. And I remember my mother always crying around my birthday because, of course, he was 27. She was in her 20s, early 20s. So left her with two kids. She was pregnant with the third one, all girls. And I remember thinking, that's not going to be me. That's not going to be me. I'm not going to be crying for a man. I'm not going to be there not being able to manage how to take care of my kids, not knowing how to feed them. Well, lo and behold, I don't know what my ex-husband did. He did something. I don't know. He had an affair, whatnot. And I remember getting my daughter, because my daughter and my son are 11 months apart. And I want to say by the time I was 18, I already had them both. So I want to say I was like 19, and he was months old. She was a year old and something, barely. and driving to my mother's, bawling and crying, going, oh my God, what did I do? I just became my mother. I have two kids, no education. And by then I had gotten my GED. Education's always been a big part for me. Even when I was married at 15, I've always been very, very intelligent and persistent and hardworking and learning. That's the one talent that I had that I used all the time. And I was like, no, I'm not going to end up like my mom. I'm not going to end up like my mom. I'm going to get something. And so I still ended up getting my GED. I got medical assistant. I was pregnant with my first one, became a medical assistant. Didn't work. And then I got a phlebotomy because education was always key for me because of what experience my mother had growing up. But even then, when my ex-husband was unfaithful and I had my two kids, I only had a GED and some vocational. I'm like, this isn't going to cut it for two kids. What am I going to do? He doesn't work. He's just so jealous. He hides stuff. And one of the things that he had said, and this is the breaking for me of awareness, because there's one thing when he does things, but there's another when it's the moment. And every woman, any person involved in a relationship with a narcissist has it. And it's this awakening moment of going, oh my gosh. And my moment was when I turned 18. He said, you're not my little girl anymore. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's when I realized, oh my gosh, this guy's a predator. I married a predator. How? What?
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you all can relate, please mention and write and tell your story, because more women, more people who are around these type of individuals need to know. That moment is when I said, I can't be in this relationship. Mm-hmm. So that was the breaking process of transitioning. Then I knew his ways of narcissism, which is the gaslighting. He would hide my things. Oh, let me tell you, one of the right here, vivid memories of gaslighting. And I didn't even know what gaslighting was. And I thought I was going crazy.
Yeah.
Yes. I love apple pie. Peach pie is my favorite. And I remember we had gotten one from the store, and at night it was like my little dessert. And I went to bed. The next morning, I saw it was almost all gone. And I remember my ex-husband going, I hate pies. Oh, how dare you eat that? Oh, you know, you're just going to get fat and this and that. Just, of course, name calling, putting down as usual. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, I'll just get my pie. My pie's not going to tell me anything wrong. And so I go to bed, wake up, it's almost gone. And I tell him, I thought you didn't like pie. It's almost gone. And it was just him and me. The kids were too small. And he said, no, you ate it. What do you mean? He's like, yeah, you were sleepwalking and you ate it in your sleep. What? I mean, I don't even eat with a fork. There's a spoon in there. I mean, my brain would know to eat it with a fork if it was me. And we had all the evidence. Yeah. Nope.
Yeah.
It was you. I was going crazy thinking, did I do that? What? I ate all of that? That's so much. My stomach couldn't handle all of that. I was going crazy for a couple of years until I knew what gaslighting was.
Yeah. And there is that, like, the aha moments that I get to see either in my therapy room or within the community, where they learn, a survivor learns a piece of language, right? Okay. The term gaslighting or love bombing or trauma bonding, whatever the language is. And you just see it like, that's what I've experienced for years. I am not crazy. That is something they're doing.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And that's the best moment ever, when you know it was not you. My goodness. It's the self-torture that someone does to oneself thinking it was you. And I would do that to myself. I would torture trying to be the perfect mom, trying to be the perfect wife. I couldn't keep it up. I was just killing myself in that process. There was no way, until finally, when I had said, okay, that's it, I'm done. I'm going to give him my best week of everything I can do. And I would make sure I cleaned the house, took the kids, dressed the kids, made food. I mean, I just didn't exist just to please him. Mm-hmm. Then at the end of that week, he complained about something. I don't know what it was. You don't do this enough, because it's always never enough. And that's when I just said to myself, wow, I gave 100% of everything I could, and it wasn't enough.
Yeah. And there's that, right? So often if you've been conditioned to believe you're not good enough from either your partner or your family of origin or, you know, wherever that's coming from, you can go with, I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
But what's happening is the goalpost is always moving.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you are doing your very best, the goalpost will move so that you don't feel good enough always. That goalpost will move right all over. Even if you have done all of the things, goalpost will move.
Yes, it becomes conditional. I have to do A, B, C to merit my good enough. Mm-hmm. And when it's conditional, there will never be an ending of conditions. It's like your journey. There will never be an ending of the journey. You're going to enjoy this longest, awesome ride of life. And it wasn't until I was able to discern, it's not about the conditions. It's about me being me, human, being a person, being alive, being able to humanly connect with myself and others. Just the fact that I'm alive is good enough. And I tell myself every single day, even this morning, I said, I am good enough. Whether I cook, whether I clean, whether I do this, whether I do that, there's no condition. My good enough is unconditional. And I love myself unconditionally because I am good enough.
Yeah. And I think that that is such an amazing transition into that idea of conditional. Because something we talk about all day long, all the time on the podcast, within all of my content, because I'm a play therapist by training, so I work with littles. But the difference between what it feels like to have conditional love, which is what an abuser can give, they can't give the other. And then what we, all of the survivors I'm working with, they have the ability to give unconditional love. But that conditional love, where strings are always attached, is literally all the ingredients needed for people pleasing. Because you need to act a specific way to get the feeling of love. And so that, you know, as you're thinking about giving, you know, giving yourself love, unconditional love, but also expecting your loved ones around you to also kind of have unconditional love. It may be you sit back and assess and you're like, oh shit, I've got one person in my life that their love is not transactional. And so sometimes it's not your choice what kind of love they're giving, right? It's not your choice, but it's really important to look at that as, especially if you are really focused on, I would like to end my people-pleasing ways.
Yes.
I think that's so important to assess the relationships.
Definitely. One of the things I like to give my patients who are people-pleasers is the circles of control, the blank one, and then the one that's pre-filled out. So they could start learning, what can I control? Can I control other people's behavior? Can I control other people's actions? Can I control other people's thoughts and feelings? Who can I control? Because they're so used to blaming, justifying, minimizing, using distorted thinking, and they don't do it on purpose. These are defense mechanisms done to help you tolerate the present toxicity, to make it less toxic to the mind, therefore more bearable to the body. And so they continue that cycle because, oh my goodness, this is why I love neurobiology, is because it's like the maquinitas that they play at the gambling. They put in the coin and they go, okay, let me see. They put in the coin, let me see. And then boom, they get a couple of coins, which is that love and attention and support and understanding, that selective, intermittent type of love. And they get the dopamine rush, which mimics the love chemical, and they start getting that addiction, because my mom had that addiction for men is really the addiction for love and understanding, because the mind, there's a part of the brain called the orbital frontal cortex when we're born. And when the mother has her baby, we have that love chemical, which is the oxytocin, but the baby has that brain chemical wanting to attach electrically, wanting to find their mother. And so when that's missing, guess what? The mind is going to still want it. And so when they find that intermittent type and the mind's going, oh, that felt so good. I want some more of that. And I will do anything to give me some more of that. It becomes addicting just to get that dopamine rush of the love, even if it's a short term. Yeah.
Yes. And then I was thinking on the flip side, it's also a way to prevent conflict and scary things.
Yes. Some of the characteristics, they're avoidant conflicts. But let me tell you, there's a reason why the people are people pleasers. So growing up with the physical abuse I endured, if my grandmother would not have called CPS and had us removed in that home, we would have not been alive today. Because that's how bad it was with one of her boyfriends. And so people know, or at least I would people please, because I was stuck thinking that if I didn't, I'm going to die and I'm in danger. So sometimes it's not only the love, it could be the security and the safety. And for me, I was stuck with those two, thinking, oh my gosh. And your heart starts beating super fast. And sometimes your breathing starts going a little bit more shallow. And there's nothing there, but it's all because of the word no. That elicits that same response that happened to you way back when you were a little kid. Then you decide to people please to avoid the tolerance of that distress.
Yes. So how do you help people, or what are some of the challenges you see as people want to shift from that constant people pleasing? And again, fawning, when we look at it that way, or people pleasing, doesn't matter your language, sometimes your nervous system has to know you're safe enough first before it's going to be like, nope. Like, we can move on and set a boundary. But if you do not feel safe, your nervous system is going to tell you a big no. Oh, but what are some of the ways that you can start shifting and trying on boundaries, trying on putting yourself first?
Okay. Well, let's start with boundaries. Oh, man. Okay. So everything's a process. One of the main things is enter communities with like-minded people who are within the same values. Find out who you are, because one of the common characteristics is loss of self-identity. You're so used to being a chameleon and a people pleaser of what others want that you don't even know who you are. Mm-hmm. There's this movie, I believe in film therapy, and it's called Runaway Bride with Julia Roberts. And I like that, because that talks about people pleasing. They call her the runaway bride because she was an avoidant conflict. She would avoid conflicts and run away. And in the end, and yes, spoiler alert, she didn't even know.
You have not watched it.
I know, right? After all these years. So yeah, she was eating all these different eggs. I remember that Richard Gere was going interviewing all the past exes. And oh yeah, she liked them scrambled. She liked the Benedict. She liked them over easy, boiled. So in the end, she just let go of everything. It's like a support group when you're an alcoholic. Stop the drinking. You stop all the entering of those short-term love and attention that doesn't suit you, and focus on, okay, what are my values? What do I like? What I do not like? When you figure out your values, for example, mine was education, always has been, no matter what narcissist was near me. And when he said, pick education or me, I said, well, see you later, because that was first and foremost. And so pick your non-negotiable, this is what I need to. And then you surround yourself with behaviors that are going to take you towards that, but also take you away from that. You put it in your planner, write down those behaviors every single day with those values. For example, mine are responsibility, respect, family, it is health, and then it is knowledge. And in that order, you have to know 1, 2, 3, pick at least 2 or 3, what order are they in? Then you go ahead and do the behaviors. For example, I opened the podcast episode. Why? Because I want to educate with the knowledge and help others. So that is my value. I work within my own practice. Why? Because I want to be there for my family, because I value family. And I have that responsibility towards my patients, but also towards my family. And I try to be responsible. That's my number one in all those matters. So I have to be responsible within myself and my behaviors to make sure of my integrity to stay true to who I am. So when you do that every single day, and it takes 66 days of continuous commitment effort, we have what is called neuroplasticity. So what happens is when we're doing a new behavior, we're going to be doing a different journey of pathways in the brain. And so you're going to have that sensation of like, whoa, wait, the body's going, this is not the route you usually take. Why are you taking this way? Well, this is the shortcut. No, we're going to take the long road right now. But why? Trust me, you're going to enjoy this journey. Take the long road. So then first and foremost, you need to supply yourself with a support system, with like-minded people within those values, as I mentioned, but then also some resources, which is why I recommend professional help with therapists to give you resources. What are resources? There are a list of numbers of ways to calm your nervous system. And you want, this is the number one thing people do, and I'm sure you have heard it in your practice. They go, I didn't have to do it because everything was okay. Mm-hmm. What? Did you guys know that the mind learns best when you're calm? Why? Because when you're in fight, flight, freeze, people pleasing, appease, fawn, it's thinking survivor. I'm going to protect myself and survive. That's what it's thinking.
Yep. Your learning brain offline.
Completely offline. Like Dr. Dan Siegel says, you want to flip the lid. Yes. Here's your prefrontal cortex. You want to access all of this. How? You need to do your calming strategies at least 3 to 5 times a week, regardless. It is your mental muscle. So you need to exercise it like we do with physical exercise, or it's going to get lazy. It's just going to be of convenience and go, oh, I don't want to do it. Oh, everything's good. No, you want to build that resilient brain window of tolerance to tolerate what's going to get you. So you could be like, bring it on. Dale. You know, and you want to fight that, and it'll be like nothing. It'll be like, oh, chump change. I got this. You know, you feel empowered. Because that is the end goal, if there was, you know, goal, not destination, which is feeling empowered and being authentic, true to who you are, regardless of what anybody else thinks.
Yeah, and finding that sense of self isn't, right, this like, oh, I've done it. Like, I'm there, I've done it. Because we change over time. And if you are practicing, right, so I'm sure my audience, a lot of people, I actually did an episode on this, but on mindfulness, I can't remember what I called it, but it's like, you don't have to be like in your cute little yoga outfit on the beach with like the sunset meditating. That's not what mindfulness is. That's not what it is being, you know, to be grounded and mindful and do your yoga on the beach. It is that process that you do all the time, as much as possible.
Yeah.
Because even those of us, like I'm a squeaky wheel, right? I will say what I think. I think Anita is probably in that realm as well. But there are still times when I'm going to be the squeaky wheel. I'm not going to people please. And I am anxious about it.
Oh, yeah.
Because it would be so much easier to people please in that moment. So no matter how good you are at speaking your mind, you're still going to need those skills of calming your shit down.
Yes.
So that
you can do it in the hard times, not just the easy times.
Yes. So you want to create a habit. So by the time you are in that hard time, the brain, well, it's already in the long-term memory. It'll go, oh yeah, I can use this technique. It's there, filed up, ready to use for when it feels the sense of fear coming up, and it feels that emotion chemical going into the body is going, oh, let's short circuit that part and let's put in this part. And you put in the resources. I just used it, which took me a while to use this resource, but I have to practice it myself. So one of the things, and I put it in one of my podcasts, and even me, I find it sometimes like, oh, why didn't I say this? And so that's the process, guys. You're going to be like, oh, what was it again? What was it again? And then you do what you weren't supposed to do, say yes all the time. And then like, oh, I should have done this. Well, then guess what, guys? Last week, I actually used it when it was supposed to be used. See, that's the process, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. So they had asked me, hey, I need to ask you for a favor. And I was like, yes, wait. I go, before I say yes, know that I have a quick reflex of saying yes because I tend to be a people pleaser. So even though I said yes, it's not really a yes. I have to see if it fits within my values and my schedule, and then I will think, give me a there's just a couple of seconds or a minute or so, or sometimes I might have to call you back, but let me think about it. And then maybe I might say yes, I might not. I did that. And I was just like, you go, girl, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. That's the process, guys.
Yeah. And I think there is, again, I think that the people want to, and especially people, you know, a lot of my audience, they have left and they are still having to communicate with their ex-partner because they share children.
Oh my gosh.
And they're in the family court system.
Yes.
So they're getting told by professionals, by family, everyone left and right, set boundaries, set and maintain your boundaries, hold your boundaries, right? Like they're being told that, all while being told tongue in cheek, like actually just say, just keep everything nicey nice to keep everything calm. So they're being told all these different things. And as opposed to just being like, I'm setting and holding a boundary, let's do that self-reflection first. I don't know if I can hold this boundary or how to hold this boundary if I don't know what my value system is.
Definitely. And for me, because, oh, I'm just so glad my kids are so much older and I'm out of that torture. So I feel for you guys. Please get the help. Please have an amazing support system. I didn't. You know, my own family, this is why I cut them out because – you know, there's a reason why I'm a survivor. And one of the hardest things to do, guys, is that sometimes that if your family are the toxic ones, they're not really family. They're related. They're relatives. So got to discern, are they relatives or are they family? Because family love and support you no matter what. And so when my own mother would tell me, why did you leave him? You know, so what if he was unfaithful? You know, I'm like, so what if he doesn't provide for you? And but you guys are married. And I'm like, no, I can't do that for my kids. And my sister would say, well, so what if he calls you the B word or this? You've already been with him long enough to know that you can tolerate it. Just, you know, put up with it to get the money. And I was just like, that's not what it's about, you know? And so I already knew I needed to create my own support system, and it wasn't them. So know that love and support. And oh my gosh. Okay. So when we got divorced, my kids were 4 and 5. So you can imagine all those years fighting the system. And in where I live, it's very misogynistic. So I made the mistake of hiring a male attorney. And you know what he said? I know it just boils my
blood. It probably won't surprise me because we hear some really horrific things.
Yes. Yes. So you want to look at the attorneys that have your same value system. Okay. And I remember he had said I had already spent like $1,300 or something down payment. And the whatever partner said, well, you know, I know he owes you $40,000, but what if we just knock it off $20,000 and maybe he'll pay you? And I'm like, he hasn't paid in God knows when. And you want me to still reduce that for what? I go, no, I don't care if I have to be here till I'm 99 years old. It's the principle that matters that he needs to be responsible. And I'm not eating what is not my responsibility, discerning that. And I said, you know what? You're fired. And I felt so empowered, by the way. And then I went and hired a female attorney. And she said, oh, no, we're going to nip this in the butt. And he's not. And I was lucky enough that she's gone through something. And she said, nope, we're going to work this out. And I'm like, yes. So nope. Did I get it reduced? No. And then I added in the divorce decree because he was so toxic. He had to make sure that, and it helped that there was a female judge, but he had to tell me 24 hours before because I had to always be at his whim. Let's see if he shows up or not. And if he doesn't, oh, well, too bad, so sad. And my kids had to eat it. That, you know, here we are, they're them getting dressed. I remember one time on his birthday and I'm like, he didn't always because he had to work. No, he didn't. But okay, you know, and I had to be the one to try to make it okay. And, you know, you can hear my voice. Like it's because my kids are my family. My kids I love. And so what ended up happening, I went with the attorney and I said, we need to make sure that there is somebody that's going to pick him up. He has to text me, him and nobody else, that he's going to pick him up. And if there's no text message, then too bad, so sad. And I made sure I stayed true. They weren't scared of me. They were scared because I knew I was going to stay true to who I was and implement those boundaries. I don't care. Call me whatever you want to call me. That's what the divorce decree says. So I have that divorce decree, guys, to back me up and be like, call me any name in the book. I'm just following the law. And and then I also, what I recommend, had the mom, somebody, and they designated the only people that could pick them up. So it couldn't be him. And it had to be the mom or it had to be the sister or the aunt. And if they were not there, and I would make sure that the car, that it was them, and he was not in the car, then they would go. And if not, go straight to the police department, let them know, look, he didn't show up, no, or it was him and he was there. Because if you don't have a paper trail, there's no way the judge is going to be like, oh, really? It was that important? You didn't even make a report?
Yeah, and that even is, it's like one of those times where you're damned if you do, damned if you don't most of the time. And so it is, it's like going back to building yourself up, building, really touching base on your values, because it's going to be scary.
Yeah.
It's going to be scary to do all of those things when you have to fight the system, fight your ex-partner and stand up for your babies. It's scary every time. And over time, you will get better. Your nervous system will get stronger and you won't be as fearful all the time.
Oh, yes. And one of the strategies I recommend as well is doing I guess because we're talking about court, but mock trials, mock debates. But I always say, get the picture of the person you don't like. Get a picture of the person who's supportive of you. You can even use plush animals and put their names. Get a string and put it around you. Get the plush animals, pretend it's them. And then you can say something that they would say and go, no. And you like physically, because we learn through movement and processing, guys. So then we can get out of that line going, I'm not in your bubble. You cannot cross that. And let's pretend if somebody else is there, let's say some friend of yours, pretend that they're moving them closer. See how your body feels with that photo of them moving closer or that plush animal and go, stop. I can't put up with it anymore. And then you can do the butterfly hug, or you can do a belly breathing, or do a sensory, some ice on your chest to help with your breathing, blowing a balloon, letting go of a balloon. And once you're cool, calm, and collected, go back and go, let's do it again. Bring them closer. No, not now. And so you're doing it not while they're there. You're doing a pretend play. It may sound silly, but the mind doesn't know the difference between if they're there or not there. And then having that support system on the other side, knowing, oh my gosh, look at the other side. If you don't have anybody there, have the picture of them go and then get them and hug them. So you're not alone. And you're doing what I call the salsa dance. You're going into distress, but then you're going into the relief. And you're going to discern, your body's going to discern towards the, even though I get in danger, guess what? I'm still safe. So that's one strategy I recommend.
Yeah, I really like that one. And again, Anita, you and I could probably talk for days because we did the first time we were having a conversation. We talked forever. And we will probably continue our conversations, you know, from here on out. But if anyone wanted to find you and work with you, I know you do have a book.
Yes.
that I am happy to promote, and it'll be in the show notes below. But how can people find more about you and some of the strategies that you share and more about your podcast?
Oh, thank you. Yes. So I do have a podcast called Empowering Women in Conversations. And this is to help women who are people pleasers in failed relationships become empowered and authentic within themselves so they could lead successful relationships, loving relationships, which includes themselves. And you can find me on Instagram, Anita Sandoval, also on LinkedIn, Facebook, and my website, www.anitasandoval.com. You can find all my information there. And of course, even my book that I had written, which, by the way, will be turned soon this year in an audiobook, Broken Change.
How exciting.
Yes. How I Broke the Cycle of Abuse and Neglect and Went from Victim to Survivor. And some projects I'm doing this year, guys. I mean, let me know. Yes, no, if you guys like it or not. But I've already worked on 12-step people pleasing group, which I will start doing live just to kind of, you know, get the word out, and then working on a people pleasing community and an online course. It's just a small 4-week online course to help with calming down the nervous system, the neurobiological approach to make sure that you can stay true to who you are. And it's just a simple organic approach protocol that I came up with since I am EMDR certified, and we can use it 3 to 5 times a week. And I have used it with my patients within myself. And let me tell you, it has calmed down the nervous system within 6 weeks. So those are my future projects.
Yes. Yeah. Amazing resources. And I hope you guys do check out her podcast, because I think, again, there's such overlap with our kind of audiences and communities. And again, if you're like driving, like today when we're recording, it is snowing like all crazy here. And so don't try and get this information down. It will be in the show notes of this episode. All the links will be there. And I just, Anita, I want to thank you again for being with us and connecting with me. And I want to thank you all for joining us for the Rising Beyond podcast today.
Thank you for having me. Always a pleasure speaking with you, and excited to see what we can do to help more of the community.
If you found hope and support through this podcast, there are a few things you can do to help us continue to provide meaningful and value-packed episodes. First, you can follow and subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you're willing, while you're there, you can give us a rating and review, which will help other survivors find us so we can offer them this help as well. And if you have the means and desire to do so, you can click on the Buy Me a Coffee link and help provide a small financial contribution to the show. This allows us to spend more time and energy finding the best guests and providing the most value to you. And if you want to work with me and the Rising Beyond community, go to www.risingbeyondpc.com for details.